Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? Leaks are no match for DIY duct tape. And a wrench. And a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tube I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect.
Maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
Roto-Rooter.
It's a measure of the greatness of a franchise when, in discussing their dynasty period, you have to ask which one. For all intents and purposes, the third Montreal dynasty began with their 1971 win over Chicago. And after another championship in 1973, they started a stretch of four in a row in 1976. Their coach in the late 70s was Scotty Bowman.
Well, in those days, home ice meant a lot. It doesn't seem to mean as much in the play. More teams now, I think, win some games away from their own rink, you know. And although we did win a couple of games in Boston, but we started off, we usually started off the series with a 2-0 lead. You know, when you have a super team, when the other team has to beat you 4-5, that's pretty hard. But we had finished first place. I mean, when you look at our record in those 3 years, the 1 year, 76-77, was the year that everybody thinks was probably the best team. I think it's still a point record, 132 points. But we lost in the 3 year span 29 games. So we were favored. It wasn't an upset for us to win. It's always tough to lead the league in points and then duplicate it in the playoffs, even when you have a powerhouse team. And, Dryden was a tremendous goalie. They had an all-star defenseman, the ones I mentioned, and two good scoring lines. So we were the favorites for sure because we did finish in first place.
Scotty was not, at the time, the great communicator that, at the time, that was not the style. He was not talking too much to us, but we had good practices. They were not too long. They were very high tempo practice with a lot of speed, passing, shooting, you know, doing things very fast. And he put the right guys on the ice all the time.
Rajon Uhl won 5 Stanley Cups with Bowman. So did Larry Robinson.
I don't think Scotty is any different than any other coach when it comes as far as systems and preparation and all that other stuff. I think where Scotty shone above anybody that I've ever been involved with, it was the way that he could manipulate a bench. After 2 or 3 shifts, he knew who was going, who he could rely on, and he would always, if something wasn't going right, he would always tinker with just one guy. For instance, when Shuddy and Flower played together, you never saw Shuddy or Flower go on another line. Those two always stayed constant, but you had Pete Mahovich, you had Lemaire, you had sometimes LaRouche. When he came with our club, he always moved different guys in and out when it wasn't going right, and that was his strength. I mean, even we played in a charity game over in Russia, and a friend of mine, Jacques Caron, was with me, and you know, he had never been around Scotty before, and so he was one of the assistant coaches on the bench with Scotty. And then when we started playing against the Russians, he was coaching, I think, a bunch of guys from New Jersey, and then all of a sudden he started tinkering with the lines and putting the lines around and putting different guys with different guys and moving the defense around and all this kind of stuff. And after the game, Jacques said, "This guy's a genius." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "He knew right away who was going and who." I said, "It's just a pickup game." He said, "It didn't matter. He just made little subtle changes, and the next thing you know, guys were going." And he's just a genius that way. He sees things that other people don't.
I think he brings us to respect the other team. No matter how good you are and how good we have as a team, if you don't respect the other team, you have a chance to lose. And you have to be afraid to lose all the time. It's like in business or in regular life, if you don't respect the other people and you're not afraid to lose, and one day it's going to get against you.
Bowman was famous for keeping his own players, like Yvon Cornoyer, on edge. It was an ability Harry Sinden admired.
I think when you have a lot of elite players like he had, it sometimes takes on a more difficult job in many ways for the coach. I don't think we ever went into Montreal when there wasn't some controversy with one player or two players with Scotty Bowman. They were always having a controversy with him, and he kept that going, but they wouldn't show up and not play. So he might have been the perfect coach for that team.
Sims jams it up, kicks it loose, and LaFleur gets it. Shot, score, Lemaire! LaFleur got it, centered it to Lemaire, and the Stanley Cup won by the Canadiens.
We were sky high coming off a 4-0 series against Philly. Knowing how good Montreal is, we played them all year, but you know, you go in with the confidence that, hey, we can win. We can beat these guys. And we lost 4 straight.
Rick Middleton was in his third NHL season, his first with the Bruins, when they lost to the Canadiens on that Jacques Lemaire goal in 1977.
Half their team's in the Hall of Fame. You look back and Cornwallier and Lafleur and Schott and Robinson and Dryden and Lapointe. You just go on and on and on. Pete Mihalovic is still on the team. I mean, it was a great team, and you got to respect that, because one thing, even though, you know, I never liked Montreal when I was in Toronto and obviously in Boston, is you got to respect them for their desire to win. They would do anything they could to get the players they wanted to win, and they did. They were the New York Yankees of the NHL.
That 77 team amassed a league record 132 points and rolled through the playoffs with a 12-2 record with Bowman at the helm.
The team of 76-77, it's going to be hard to pick which is the greatest team, so you probably have to go with the statistics. You know, we lost 8 games in the season, and we only lost 1 at home. We lost, I think Boston beat us on Halloween. Like, they beat us at the Forum, 1 game. They were the only team that beat us at home that season out of... I think it was 40 games. It's amazing.
The bad news for the Bruins and the rest of the NHL? Montreal kept almost all of that team intact the following season. Once again, they rolled through the regular season, losing only 10 times. They dispatched the Red Wings in 5 games in their first-round playoff series and swept the Maple Leafs in the semifinals. Then, for the second consecutive year, they'd meet the Bruins in the Cup final. The Habs took Game 1 4-1 and Game 2 in overtime. Peter McNabb was Boston's second leading scorer in the playoffs that spring, and he remembers coming back to the Garden for Game 3.
You know, I always remember Game 2, the second time we played Montreal up there, went into overtime, and we almost won it. And we came back here, and that night, the crowd gave Cheesy an ovation that was just off the charts. And I think we didn't need anything, but it was like... everybody's behind this.
The home crowd was rewarded with a 4-0 shutout in Game 3, and a whole lot more 3 nights later.
Rick Smith cleared it back to the top side, and now Jonathan and Bouchard, here they go. Jonathan and Pierre Bouchard. And Jonathan lands it right-hand on Bouchard. Bouchard pounding away with the right hand. Now Jonathan with the left hand. And balls on top of Bouchard.
Bouchard, Jonathan... fight in Boston, I remember Bouchard had his nose broken, his eye socket broken, had 60 stitches inside his mouth. Somebody asked him if he was ever going to play again. He says, yeah, if I take up the organ.
Don Cherry's lunch pail gang was ignited as McNabb watched in awe.
We expected Stan to win. We didn't expect Stan to lose. And we wasn't sitting there going, oh my God, somebody step in and help Stan, you know? Because what Stan could do, like if you want to get like technical with it, Stan could stand in there and take 5 punches to the head. The other guy would start thinking, hey, I'm up. And then they'd just cheat a little bit, and he'd pull him down, and he would come straight up and boom. And you couldn't cut him. You couldn't hurt him. You couldn't intimidate him. I mean, he was just wild.
We have another one going. Wencik pounding away at the other Montreal player, Lupien, I think it is. Big Gilles Lupia. And now Lupia and Wencik. Now Lupia throws Wencik to the ice. And we have blood all over the ice inside the blue line.
The game was tied at 3 after 60 minutes.
Here's Schmatz trying to clear it. Robinson's blocked. Blocked by Park. Up to Sheppard with Marcotte. Sheppard moving in. Centers to Schmatz. Did he score?
We paid quite a bit for Bobby Schmatz, and I felt we got paid off for it that night when he scored the winning goal against the Canadiens.
Harry Sinden was the general manager of the Bruins.
Most of his shots went just over the net, you know, but I think this one rung off the crossbar. It was a great shot. I was sitting next to Mr. Jacobs that night. I recall I said, Bobby had played okay for us, but he hadn't really scored like we thought he would. I said, okay, we got our money back tonight.
Then they turned it up. I mean, then I think they pulled LaRouche, Mondou, and Trombley out of the stands to play in Game 5 up there. 3 brand-new fresh faces, 3 talented guys that were just flying around. You're going, where do these guys come from? You know, what the hell's going on here? We're just, you know, everybody's banged up for being through the playoffs, and these 3 guys are jumping around like, you know, it's just like, good Lord, you know. And I think Trombley had a couple of goals in the series. But that was what they had.
Going up there, we really felt we had a chance to beat them now. You know, that was a tough loss for them in the Garden. And sometimes when you catch them after a loss like that, you can capitalize. But we didn't.
That is it.
The Montreal Canadiens win 4-1. They're mob Penn Dryden. And the Canadiens win their third Stanley Cup in a row and their 21st in the team's history.
I think whether either team wants to accept it or not, I think there was a lot of respect for the way that Boston played at home, and they respected the way that we played in Montreal. We knew that it was never going to be a cakewalk.
The Bruins had put a scare into Larry Robinson in that 1978 final, but it was nothing compared to their semifinal series the following spring.
There's one thing that I will never forget. The last year we won in 1979, that cup we won 1979, really, the Boston Bruins, they had us in the cables. That series, Boston Bruins deserve it more than we did.
Rajon Ould's club was on a collision course with Boston once again. Montreal swept Toronto in the opening round, while the Bruins did the same to the Penguins. Don Cherry knew what his club was up against.
No team was better than the Montreal Canadiens. If you wanted to be truthfully with it, the big thing they had going for them, they had great depth. And their third and fourth line were really good. And to me, I've been watching it right up till the day, I don't think there's ever been a team in the National Hockey League could ever match. If you got by that first line, the second and third and fourth, and then you had Savard, Lapointe, and Robinson, and then when you get by them, and they were always, one of them were always on the ice. And when you got by them, you got Kenny Dryden. So all Hall of Famers.
Despite the odds, Peter McNabb was ready.
I think of the three, it was certainly the one we believed that we could win. We believed that, hey, we've been through everything against these guys. We've seen their best. And you know what? I think we can.
By the third year, we thought we got these guys. We, you know, hated them enough, respected them enough, knew how to beat them. We thought we knew how to beat them finally. And we came as close as you can come. And not win.
Rick Middleton and company dropped the first two games at the Forum. But Scotty Bowman knew that with a change of venue for Game 3, it was far from over.
Every time you played in Boston, and even if you're coaching, I imagine it'd be the same if you're playing, you felt cramped. You always felt like, you know, everybody's on top of you, you know. And I think it was one of my favorite rinks to go in and play because of the atmosphere and because of the size of the ice surface. If you didn't bring your A game in Boston, you're not winning.
Moving out is Brad Park off the faceoff. On the right wing, across the red line, Park into the zone. Park holds, goes to the slot. He's got it. Goal!
That Brad Park goal was the difference in Game 3, and it got the Bruins and the Garden faithful back in the series. Two nights later, they nearly took the place down.
O'Reilly on the left wing to McNabb breaking in. McNabb fakes. His shot is blocked. Another shot. He scores! Great play! The building is moving! It is 3-2. Over to Gainey. Gainey feeds it over to Napier. Napier across the Boston line. Comes to the middle. Off to Lapointe. Lapointe drives. Score! It's tied up. Tremblay forced back. Ran into Jarvis. Ricky Smith to Middleton. Middleton on the go with Rattel. Middleton feeds it to Rattel. Shot! Score! John Rattel! 3 minutes and 46 seconds into overtime. John Rattel gets the hat trick to win it 4-3 for the Bruins. Listen to these people.
The win guaranteed those people at least one more chance to see their heroes on home ice. A 5-1 loss in Montreal, then a 5-2 win back home, set the stage for an epic Game 7 in the Forum. The Canadiens, Mark Napier.
You know, anytime you get to a one-game series, anything can happen. Obviously, you know, you can play a goaltender that stops 70 shots to your 20 and you lose 1-0 or something. But, you know, I think we were confident. We certainly were glad we were playing at home and not in Boston Garden.
Death taxes and the first penalty in Montreal. Yeah, well. Well, I didn't think anybody had checked the facts, right? So I said that in the last 10 years, we had taken 80% of the first penalties, and 88% of the time we had taken more penalties than Montreal. Well, the league checked the facts out, and I was quite a bit off.
It wasn't the first penalty Harry Sinden needed to worry about on that night. It was the last.
Savard chased by Rattel, taken off the play, back out in front. Score! Wayne Cashman, set up by Ricky Middleton and John Rattel. The Bruins lead it 2-1. Cashman has it behind the net. Cashman with it in the left circle. Cashman turns. Score! Wayne Cashman makes it 3-1, Boston.
I don't think we ever had the lead in that game and just always fighting and struggling. Boston played a really good, solid checking game, and every game that we played them were tough games.
LeFleur and one-on-one on Sims. Goes to the outside, base of the circle, behind the net. Has nowhere to go. Shot scores! Napier! Guy LeFleur circled the net. Had nowhere to go with it. Threw it across in front. Napier picks the open side. It is 3-2. The Bruins lead is down to 1. Ganey cut off. Now LeFleur behind the net. Milbury doing yeoman work in front. The shot, he scores!
The game was tied at 3. Bowman confronted the possibility that their championship run could be coming to an end.
Oh, yeah. All the way through the third period, because they would take the lead. And we, I remember they actually took the lead on a goal with less than 5 minutes to go. Rick Middleton came around behind. He was a great player for Boston. He came around behind the net and stuffed one in on Dryden, and that gave them the lead.
Middleton fast, couldn't get it across to Rattel. Rattel covered by Robinson. Rattel with the puck, and it poked away. Now Middleton with it. He scores! Ricky Middleton! The Bruins lead it 4-3. With 3 minutes and 59 seconds left.
The goal that I scored, we had a third goalie dressed by the name of Jim Petty. I don't know if you remember Seaweed. He was in street clothes. So in between the second and third period, he comes down to me in the dressing room, and he goes, I'm watching Dryden. He likes to put his paddle down, you know, like a lot of goalies do today to protect, you know, when they cover the puck. He likes to put his paddle down. If you ever get a chance, throw it in the far side. It'll go in under the knob. I go, all right, thanks. Seaweed. And, you know, he's a funny guy, so I took it half joking. But so if you look at the goal I scored, I was actually in the left corner, not the, you know, I'm a right winger, right-hand shot. I'm in the left corner, so I came around the back of the net on my backhand. And it must have flashed through my brain or something, because I fired to the far side, but I didn't have the angle. I wasn't out far enough. So it hit the inside of his blocker. And it went in.
Well, we thought we had it for sure, and we had it all set up and the whole deal. I mean, that you're talking about, there's only everybody's only got one more shift left, two at the most, and all they have to do is just hang tight. We didn't lay back. We almost scored again. So it wasn't that we went back and, you know, fell back or anything like that.
The most dangerous man in that Montreal lineup had been held in check throughout the series. Cherry had Don Marcotte shadowing Guy LeFleur.
LeFleur was... It was tough to hit because he never really handled the puck that much coming up. He was just mostly a pass, quick and go, and just get back in the open for a shot. So you could hit him once in a while, but not really solid.
I told him, I says, if LeFleur goes to the bathroom, you go with him. And that's right, Donnie was absolutely fantastic. He held LeFleur. And, you know, that's the one guy that could skate with LeFleur. I mean, he never, ever got the credit he deserved.
Donald Marcotte was probably one of the better defensive players at that time, and Guy LeFleur was a phenomenal offensive player. Donald Marcotte probably did the best job of all the players that ever played against Guy. Donald Marcotte was able to kind of stick with him. He was a real concentrating defensive type player. And we were down in that game, and we were double shifting LeFleur with about 5 minutes to go, 4 minutes to go. And I think what happened is they were matching. Donald Marcotte was playing every shift against LeFleur, and then we jumped LeFleur, and then I think what happened is whoever else would have been the left winger, I'm not sure who it was on Boston, two of them came out. And they actually played probably at least 10 or 15 seconds before they were able to, you know, it was one referee and two linesmen in those days. The linesman that called the play, John D'Amico, he didn't call it immediately, but they didn't get anybody off the ice.
A two-minute minor has been called on the Bruins. Here's the announcement.
Boston's minor penalty for having too many players on the ice.
Too many players on the ice. This is the one thing that Don Cherry was concerned about, the lack of room on the bench, the lack of maneuverability for changing lines. The second time in the series, his team has been called for having too many men on the ice.
Even the linesmen were yelling, you got too many guys, get one off. The guys were not even close to the bench anymore. They were down playing. There was just all the action. So they had to call it. I was out there watching LeFleur for probably had about 2 or 3 minute shift. It was a long shift in those days. And when he went off, I came right across. And if I recall, Cherry grabbed two guys by the shirt to hold them from going on the ice, and two more went out.
John D'Amico. I went to John. I said, John, Are you sure? He says, Brad, I waited 20 seconds. I had to call it. But then again, you know, you're saying, okay, we can kill this off. We've got the right guys. We can kill this off. We've done it before.
We start counting penalties. We kill the first minute and the whistle blow. And I look, and Cherry's calling for a timeout. And I'm going, no.
Ah, LaFleur with it. Dryden may go. LaFleur starting out. Dryden's drifting. The pass up comes to Lemaire. Lemaire to LaFleur. He scores!
Only Guy LaFleur. I don't care now. I see guys shoot the puck, and they're terrific shooting pucks, and they're great now. But it was one of those ones that, and guys that play the game will know, it was one of those skippers that he let it go so long. He was skipping and caught just the inside of the post. I mean, it was, Gilly had it except the inside of the post. And if that goes around and misses, it comes out. We were doing pretty good killing the penalty for that one. And I always said that Lemaire was offside when he took the pass. It was beautiful. He took a pass from him and just kind of feathered it over. It was like, it was a beautiful setup, I'll tell you. And Gilly almost got it, just got the inside of the post.
When Flower shot that thing, it was going 100 miles an hour. And I think it kind of did like a hydroplane on Gilly. I think it kind of bounced and hit the ice and then shot back up. It was like going so hard, but you can't blame Gilly or anybody on that one, because Flower put it in the far corner, and I don't know if any goalie in the world could have stopped that one.
Flower makes an unbelievable shot. Drop pass from Lemaire. Gilles Gilbert's probably only weakness, low stick side. It was an inch off the ice and an inch inside the post. It was letter perfect.
LaFleur from the top of the right wing circle rifled it by Gilles Gilbert to tie this one up. Another power play goal for Canadiens.
One of our wingers, young kids, got mixed up and jumped on. We did definitely deserve that, but we definitely didn't deserve John Rattel. Lady Bing got a high second penalty, and I still believe, I believe it to this day, that the referee tried to get Montreal back in the game when we were up 3-1. I say that, and without reservation, that when we were up 3-1, and Redmond, I can see it like today. When Redmond got that penalty, I said, uh-oh, this guy's trying to get them in the game. I had said earlier to John in the papers, if it goes to the seventh game, we'll get screwed. And John Ziegler, the president at the time, just went bananas. You know, he says, I don't mind you being colorful. I don't mind this, but when you call us dishonest, he said, if it wasn't for you and it wasn't the finals, I'd suspend the whole deal. So we went to the seventh game. We never got screwed on the seventh, too many men on the ice, because we deserved it. But we definitely got screwed on the penalties before. And, you know, that's the way I feel, and I'm being honest. And if you don't like it, that's too bad.
Despite the penalty and the late goal, McNabb and company still had overtime ahead of them.
The overtime, we got into the dressing room after the third period, and, you know, you're a little shell-shocked, obviously. But we still felt we had outplayed them to that point. So now it was, and we had some good chances.
We did, yeah. I had a pretty good chance. I got a pass from playing with Dryden in the series against the Russian that year. He always gave you the one side to shoot at, so he wants you to shoot there. So what I said, well, I'm going to fool him. I'm going to go on the short side that he's covering, because he's going to go on the other side. But he couldn't move. And I hit him right in the chest.
You know, then overtime, I think, it was one of those things that if you were a Bruin fan, we were in control, and we just couldn't find that one play.
Pass to Rajon Uhl. Tremblay breaking out on the right wing. Tremblay, right circle, goes deep, centering pass, score! Lander! The Bruins' season ends right here.
I thought we had him. I thought we had him. We were getting great goaltending, and I thought we had played an excellent game that night. I didn't see us faltering. I think he had Marcotte playing as much as he could against LaFleur, and somehow got messed up at that time. So that was a tough one to take, and you know, there's no use pointing fingers at anybody, at any of the players, or at Don or me or anybody else. It's just one of those things that happened.
Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? Leaks are no match for DIY duct tape.
And the wrench. And the towel. More duct tape. A hammer. This random tube I found in the basement. Another bucket. More tape. A little more tape. Perfect.
Maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
Roto-Rooter.